Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Sam Stein again, Candidate Confessional. I know you're waiting for the season to start. I know it's right around the corner. Don't worry about it. We're going to give you another teaser episode. This one is a bit more thematically in line with what we do here. We're going to talk about the rise and fall of now former FBI Director James Comey. And for this discussion, I am joined by two really good guests. One is our own justice reporter, Ryan J. Riley, and the other is Matthew Miller. He was the former spokesperson for the Department of Justice, somewhat critical of James Comey, but he has some incredible insights as well. I hope you enjoy this.
I am Matthew Miller, the former chief spokesman for the Department of Justice.
I was going to say, make sure you put the title that is interesting to our listeners and not the current title.
Right.
Okay. And who are you?
I'm Ryan Riley, a reporter with the Huffington Post.
All right. And we're going to talk today about the rise and fall of James Comey, now former FBI director. Doesn't that sound a little weird? Who wants to go first? How did James Comey become this sort of mythical figure in Washington, D.C.? It extends back to the Bush administration days, right?
Go ahead. Jump in. So it all dates back to one big high-profile congressional hearing in 2007 when there was a massive scandal at the Department of Justice where Jim Comey had been deputy attorney general. It was mainly around U.S. attorneys being fired. But the senator investigating that, Chuck Schumer, now the minority leader, and his chief counsel, a guy named Preet Bharara, yes. Eventually the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York.
Back around, yeah. That's
right. We're able to get Jim Comey to come and testify, I think because Preet had worked with Comey at the Southern District of New York. And there was this dramatic—
But they had heard about something that
they had
happened.
Heard about something. Yeah. But the remarkable thing about it was a congressional hearing where— No one knew the big reveal until it happened live versus like the Sally Yates hearing on Monday where we found out some new details. But the gist of what happened with her warning about Mike Flynn had been reported beforehand.
Yeah, this
no one knew any of it. And it was this dramatic hearing where Jim Comey talked about how he had been at, you know, he had heard that the White House counsel was rushing to the hospital. John Ashcroft was the AG and is at the hospital to try to get him to sign an order that Jim Comey wouldn't sign. And Comey rushed and there was this dramatic confrontation. And, you know,
the order was with respect to domestic
surveillance. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And so Comey goes to the hospital and says, no.
He says no. And on his way to the hospital, he calls Bob Mueller, the FBI director, and Mueller rushes to the hospital too. And the two of them say no. And there's this kind of – it's not a deathbed scene because John Ashcroft didn't die.
Sure.
But there's this scene where John Ashcroft like
– It's very Godfather-ish.
Yeah, he's like,
right?
Yeah, that's right. He opens his eyes from his slumber, his near coma. And you know they're trying to get him to sign it. And he says, I can't sign it because I'm not the attorney general. He is, and points at Comey. So it's this dramatic hearing.
Technically the acting AG, but yes.
Technically the acting AG. And it started this legend of Jim Comey, the truth teller. Man of integrity, the man who would stand up to the president.
So what happens with Comey after that? I mean, at the time, he's gone from the department?
He's gone. He's in private practice at the time.
So he becomes this hero among liberals and progressives for standing up to the Bush administration. And then, a couple of years later, Barack Obama's elected and he needs to have a new FBI director. So, of course, he goes to James Comey.
Yeah.
And
I mean, he got bipartisan, support because this is someone who, I think technically he's not registered anymore, but is a Republican for all intents and purposes. And this is someone who, has sort of bipartisan support. And that story was obviously very prominent in a lot of the coverage initially when Obama nominated him.
Had Comey ever been in the FBI? Do we know?
No. He'd been a prosecutor.
Okay.
But that's not unusual.
It's not unusual. And at the time, Obama appoints him. He gets a lot of accolades for this because Comey still has this incredible reputation. And was there anything of note, really, for the first couple years in his tenure? Or was it just sort of a ho-hum tenure at that point?
It was ho-hum the entire time that Eric Holder was AG.
Okay.
which was the first couple of years of Comey's tenure. And then things started to change when Loretta Lynch became the AG.
Now, I think we should stop for a second, because not everyone will understand the role, the relationship that the Department of Justice has to the FBI. Can you explain it, Ron?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we're on different sides of Pennsylvania Avenue here, and essentially the FBI is
literally across from each other.
Yeah, yes. Literally across from each other, although that won't be true in a few years, perhaps, when the FBI moves headquarters.
Beautiful building.
Old, ugly building. Yes, that they have lined up there. I'm sure it'll be turned into some condos. And so essentially, yeah, but the relationship is essentially that, you know, DOJ in a lot of ways oversees the FBI, but the FBI is very, very has a very independent streak. Technically, on paper, they oversee the FBI, but FBI agents, I don't know if a lot of them would necessarily agree with that. It's a very, you know, it's an agency that thinks a lot of its reputation and, you know, and obviously cares a lot about how they're portrayed in the public.
So now back to this change in how Comey is acting when Eric Holder, Attorney General, leaves office. They then appoint Loretta Lynch. It takes a long time, but they then appoint Loretta Lynch as Attorney General, and something changes.
Yeah, Comey, from the really almost day one that Lynch became AG, didn't treat her like she was his boss. Didn't feel like he needed to be deferential to her the way that he was to Holder. There are some small examples and big examples. Some of the small examples, things as simple as Ryan probably was at this press conference. There was this, I think it was during the San Bernardino case, where the FBI director called a press conference to brief on an update, didn't tell the AG. The AG found out and came across the street to the FBI to attend Jim Comey's press conference.
Very odd. I think that's the first time I've ever seen something like that.
You were there?
Yeah.
Good. Exactly.
You would be fired.
It just doesn't happen that way. And it's a little bit of
a turf war.
It's a little bit of a turf war and a little bit of a, I'm going to do what I want. Sure. I don't report to you. And then there were some sort of big things. One of them was the Ferguson effect. Comey going around talking, you know, basically endorsing the idea of a Ferguson effect that.
Without any evidence, you want to expand on this?
Yeah. What a Ferguson effect is?
I mean, the idea was essentially that police officers, because of how they felt they were being portrayed in the media, had backed off of doing basic police work and were afraid to go. His example was afraid to, you know, break up a group of guys on the corner late at night.
Because they thought that they would do something that they would then get in, poorly portrayed and they'd get in a lot of trouble and suddenly you'd have, you know, this media circus around you.
Correct. And his contention was essentially that was leading to a spike in crime. There wasn't really much evidence. And, you know, there's been a slight uptick in some cities, but there's a lot of different factors that go into any reason for why there's differences in crime rates.
But Comey says this thing might be happening. That's not a calculation that the Department of Justice has made at all.
And the DOJ is actively on the record saying there's no evidence of it. The White House has been saying it. So it was a very high profile break.
Interesting.
And those things are we'll preview probably what we'll get to later.
Sure.
I think that all of that background is important for what
it's
happens in July 2016 and October 2016.
But we got to go back even further then, because that's the context. And then, of course, the revelation that Hillary Clinton has used a private server and a private email address, of course, rocks the campaign. This is spring of 2015. And the question is, for a while, is the FBI actually going to be investigating this, or are they investigating this? And the FBI doesn't answer the question. I mean, just not answers the question, which is standard procedure. But then it becomes clear that they are investigating this. How did it actually become clear that they are investigating it? Did he admit it? Do we know? How did it break like that?
The New York Times reported it in
this famous story that the
Department of Justice had opened a criminal investigation. That was confirmed. By the way, the Times was right in that story. It was a criminal investigation. That the Department of Justice doesn't open, you know, security reviews.
Sure.
I mean, the Clinton campaign was spinning a little bit, and DOJ came back and spun a little bit and tried to back it up and say, "Oh, it's not a criminal investigation. It's a review of some sort."
They were
spinning a little bit, but that happened probably August 2015, roughly.
Okay.
I'd say.
All right. So either way, it's sort of irrelevant, but it gives us a little bit of chronology here. And then of course, Loretta Lynch famously has this tarmac situation with President Bill Clinton, where she gets on his plane. They're both in Arizona. They happen to be on the tarmac, two different planes. He walks over there, gets on her plane. They talk for, what, 30 minutes, something like that, allegedly about golf and the grandkids, whatever, and forces her hand in a way that I think was unanticipated. And I want to talk about whether in the end it was right of her to do this, or smart or wise or whatever you want to say. But she essentially says, I'm going to recuse myself, kind of. She says she's going to. She still holds.
Accept the recommendations of career attorneys, I believe, was the line that they were using at the time.
In that moment, as someone who is now a former spokesperson for the Department of Justice, what were you thinking about both the optics, but also more importantly, the procedures that she was now instituting or implementing?
I thought she completely bumbled it bumbled every step of that. And I told her staff that at the time. They bumbled the plane meeting. They should have never had that meeting.
Of course.
Shouldn't have held the meeting. Her staff shouldn't have let her have the meeting. When that happens, you walk on the plane and you say, "Madam Attorney General, we're late for meeting. We have to go." And she says, "Oh, we'll just go." No, we have to go right now. That was the first mistake.
Apparently was an effort to break it up at some point, but it came too late, obviously.
You don't make an effort.
It was her spokesperson who was like freaking out.
Literally,
get him off
literally
the plane.
Drag her off the plane. Yeah. I mean, that's all you can do.
Sure.
But then this sort of recusal was a huge mistake because what you've done is you've given Jim Comey all the authority. You either say, "Look, I shouldn't have done this meeting. I have a long record of being impartial. No one's ever questioned my integrity. It's not going to change how I review the case. I'm not recusing." You either do that or you recuse. There's no half recusal.
Yeah.
Because what you've done is made – you kind of have the worst of both worlds by being half recused.
Yes. You can't be half pregnant. Can't be half
That's
recused.
That's right.
So – when did Comey – and so then Comey – this – I can't believe how long this all took actually, because the Comey press conference in which he finally reveals the results of his recommendations in his inquiry into the Clinton email issue happens in June of 2016.
July 5th.
I mean, so we're over a year now past when it first started. And of course, you were there. Mm-hmm. What – I'll get to you because I know how impassioned you are about – because this was like this.
I don't know what
everything
you mean.
Facilitated from it. But you were set the scene for anyone. What is it like in that room at that time?
I mean, it was odd. Yeah. So essentially,
start in the morning because I remember this vividly. Like we sort of had an inkling that something was happening,
right?
And they put out a statement being like, "There will be a press conference with Jim Comey."
Correct.
At this time,
everyone would have been very disappointed if it didn't have anything to do with Clinton. But actually, if they wanted to sort of bring up whatever topic they felt like, they probably should have done that. It was a good press move. And
yeah,
a lot of
sure.
coverage.
But there's a lot of intrigue.
Yeah. So I think it's important to look at the relationship between the press and the FBI at that point to begin with, because I mean, Comey had basically quarterly meetings, roundtables with us, and was pretty open and. Would sort of field any questions. A lot of them he couldn't answer. His last one, I believe, is actually around a year ago right now, back in May of 2016, when he essentially was, tossed a bunch of questions about the Clinton investigation and sort of dodged and weaved
sure.
in any way he could. But I mean, was always, pretty open with the press. And then when we had this press conference, it wasn't so much a press conference as it was a statement to the cameras and there weren't any
questions.
But what's
the scene like? Is it just packed?
Yeah, it was odd. I mean, people definitely haven't seen before on the DOJ the DOJ beat. Lots of people there, lots of cameras, lots of people. So it's on the it was on the first floor of FBI headquarters, just down the we passed a portrait of J. Edgar Hoover,
yeah.
who looks creepy in an official portrait as well. You can't hide that. So it was in this room, and there was the script that was generated, and he sort of starts out saying that no one has reviewed the script of what I'm about to say at DOJ.
And what are you thinking in that moment?
I mean, it was an incredible moment. And I think during the press conference, I remember several reporters sort of gasping at sort of the lines that were coming out, because in a lot of ways, it felt like the lead up to an indictment.
Yeah.
It felt like here's
sort
everything.
Sort of buried the lead a little
right,
bit.
Right, yeah, yeah. Like if it definitely. I mean, like you were like, is he? Is he going to do this? Is this going to – or at least the recommendation of an indictment, which is all he could really do in his position. But that's what it sort of seemed to be leading up to. And then at the end, it was sort of, however, here's the situation.
Now, you having been in this situation or in this industry, I should say where are you watching this, and how quickly does your jaw hit the table?
I was watching in my office. My jaw hit the table as soon as he said, "No one at the Department of Justice knows what I'm about to say." and I remember he's talked about that out. He talked about that in a testimony a week or two ago, And, you know, he called Loretta Lynch and wouldn't tell her. By the way, I know that the Department of Justice found out about that press conference was even happening because the pool camera operator called the DOJ press office and said, hey, what's this thing at the FBI at 10 o'clock?
Wow.
Fairly shocking.
Not even a heads up that the press conference
happened. Not even. So
You hold that secret, unbelievable.
I think that's where, you know, you have to fault Loretta Lynch, because I can say with a fair degree of confidence that if he had called Eric Holder and said, I'm going to have a press conference on the Clinton matter and I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to say, he would have said, you know, the hell you are. Get your ass over in my office right now and explain to me what you're doing, and I will decide what we're going to do. I'm the attorney general, not you. I get to decide how we do this.
But he didn't even tell Lynch he was going to have a press conference, so she wouldn't even have the opportunity to.
Well, they did. Yeah, they not initially, but they did find out and had some kind of conversation.
Oh, right,
because they found out from the press and then had some kind of conversation. Sure.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So you're watching this, and he's going through a lengthy denunciation of Hillary Clinton and her irresponsibility in handling her emails and all the classified material that may or may not have been passed and so on and so forth. And this is rare. I mean, this is not – I imagine nothing like this has ever happened when you've been on the beat, and I'm imagining pretty much ever.
Yeah. It's not – first of all, the FBI doesn't hold press conferences on criminal cases without prosecutors authorizing them. That's the first thing. It's not their job.
Yeah.
It's not appropriate. They're not supposed to do it. But then even if you know, so let's say you accept all of Comey's rationale of why he had to do this. People didn't trust the process. Loretta Lynch had compromised herself. If he had come out and said, we've concluded this investigation. There was a long look at it. We interviewed this many people. We looked at this many documents. And it was the unanimous recommendation of everyone on my team that we don't bring charges. And I've transmitted that recommendation to the Department of Justice. That would have been somewhat inappropriate, but it would have been at least not violating a whole bunch of other DOJ rules, which is what he then did. Sure. By saying Secretary Clinton's behavior was careless. He then said this weird thing about how she received a number of emails that were marked classified, which put the campaign in a real tailspin because they had been saying she never received anything marked classified. They had no idea how to defend that. It didn't come out until he testified that
it was three emails.
Three emails, and he says
some of
the hearing
classifications were odd.
Well, he said at the hearing they weren't properly marked, so there's no way to expect that Secretary Clinton would have known. It's like, well, that would have been an important piece of information.
Right. I remember thinking at the time during the press conference, is like, oh, that's a campaign ad right there. Sort of what he was saying. It was that's a campaign ad that the Republicans are going to cut.
And I think your big point was like he basically had laid out the accusations to Clinton as if it were a court of law, but she would not. She was not there to defend herself. And then subsequently she would have to figure out – almost reverse engineer the case that he was making so that she could then figure it out. And I remember talking to campaign people who had no idea how many what the classified emails were.
They don't have access to them.
Sure.
They have no way to know.
So it was just a remarkable scene. It's over, and Comey, having tried to sort of thread this needle, ends up disappointing basically everybody, right? Republicans are upset because he has not – said he wants to press charges or recommended pressing charges. Democrats are livid because he has maligned Clinton without allowing her the chance to defend herself and violated basically every protocol in the book. And then he kind of just sort of, disappears. I mean, I remember not hearing about it for a while. I mean, he goes out – oh, sorry. That's not true. He has to go on Capitol Hill and then defend himself. And that's, as you said, where it sort of starts to fall apart a bit.
Yeah. On Capitol Hill, he then – kind of undermines some of the things he said at his press conference, especially this thing about classified emails. And after – it's weird. So after the press conference, Democrats were really pretty quiet. They weren't sure what to say. They were happy she wasn't indicted, but obviously mad about the press conference. But then after the hearing, where he really pushed back forcefully against the idea that she should have been charged, Democrats just kind of thought, well, we'll drop our criticism of Comey because he's now rebutted. He rebutted everything he'd said a couple days earlier.
Oh, but see, it's different for me. I remember the people in the Clinton campaign were livid.
People on the Hill dropped it.
Okay. And then he disappeared. Sorry. I remember for a while, it does make its way into certain ads. It becomes a huge talking point. Trump's railing Comey for not going further for sanctuary, act irresponsible, but not bring criminal charges. And then, famously, October 28th, we get a letter to the Hill, to Jason Chaffetz, which is when you want to talk about that day and that letter and whether it was even odder than the press conference in a way.
Yeah, I mean, it was odd. And I think, you know, one way of possibly thinking about what Comey
I suppose
was,
we should set it up. The letter says, we found more emails.
Right. Turns out they were
pertinent to potentially the investigation.
Correct.
Potentially pertinent to the investigation. And they were – well, they don't say this in the letter, but it becomes clear shortly thereafter that they were found on Anthony Weiner's laptop, husband – then husband – of Houman Abedin, Clinton's close aide. So this – and he writes what is it, like a three-sentence letter. And Jason Chaffetz, congressman, tweets out, says, investigation reopened. Now, go ahead. Sorry.
Which wasn't,
there's a lot to set up.
There is a lot to set up.
Has like 20 chapters.
Wasn't quite accurate. But I mean, one way to sort of – apparently the conversation that last week when Comey was testifying on the Hill, he sort of recounted having a discussion with one of his young attorneys at the time who basically said, should you consider that what you're about to do could make Donald Trump president? And he said – his response was, you know, not for a second that we shouldn't sure. we shouldn't think about that at all.
Which is wrong, by the way.
Sure. Yeah. Right. Which is actually,
yes,
correct.
Because the distance – opposite.
Correct. Yeah. Because, I mean, according to protocols, you're supposed to sort of not make any announcements that close to election specifically because it could impact the election. The idea that you're ignoring the impact that it could have on the election is actually sort of –
and his rationale is, I've told these people on the Hill repeatedly that the investigation is over, that we aren't pursuing anything, and now suddenly we have to pursue this matter, how can I not tell them or update them?
What you can't – we have to imagine is in his mind at that moment though is that, I mean, like a lot of people, he's probably expecting that Clinton's going to win. He's not expecting that,
sure.
that Trump is going to win, and he's going to be facing down a Republican – you know, Republicans, members of Congress who are going to be obsessed with this issue for the next
so,
year.
So Matt, why is this – what is the protocol here that he should have followed that he didn't?
Well, so – if he was going to start reviewing the emails right away, you don't tell Congress for two reasons. One, because when you start investigating someone, there's no Hillary Clinton exception. You keep quiet and you investigate them quietly. You don't send letters to the Hill telling them, you sure. know, we're going to open this new investigation. But the other thing is, there was no reason for them to even start reviewing the emails right then. So one of the things about this rule that you don't do anything that could impact election, it's often interpreted as you won't even take investigative steps close to an election if you don't have to. Now, if there's some reason you have to, either a witness is going to flee or documents are going to be destroyed, then you do what you have to. The investigation comes first. They had all the emails in their possession. There was no way these emails could be destroyed. They could have sat on that laptop, started looking at it after the election, and it wouldn't have hurt the investigation at all. But even if they did need to start – they certainly didn't need to send that letter. And the reason he did it, I mean, his concealer disclosed thing is BS. It's because he thought it was going to leak. He thought the agents in the New York field office were going to leak it. And then he was going to get called on the carpet for it and look like he was, you know, hiding it.
But he could have at that point said, it's protocol for me not to do this.
Yeah, well, that's right. And I've had this argument with a number of people at DOJ, a lot of people, angry arguments. So what if it leaks? Stuff leaks from DOJ all the time. It's not great, but you manage it. We've got something new. We don't know what it is. We're going to look at it. It's the magnitude of the coverage of a leak compared to the FBI director sending a formal letter.
Maybe you guys can weigh in, but what struck me about the letter was the brevity of it. And the reason it was struck by it was he had been criticized for going on and on at the July press conference and for talking too much. And I think he internalized that criticism in a way that forced him – or compelled him, I should say, to write a three-sentence letter that told us nothing. It could have been and maybe should have been the inverse, where if you're going to write a letter as opposed to give a camera statement, it was his obligation to at least explain the context of the investigation. One, we don't have a warrant yet. Two, we don't know how many emails are there. We don't even know if the emails are pertinent yet. But we found them and we thought that maybe you should know this. And had he been more forthcoming in the letter, perhaps history would have been a bit different.
I guess that's right. It's hard for me to wrap my head – or it's hard for me to get past the first part of your sentence, which is if you're going to send the letter. Yeah. I mean, you would never disclose any of those things that you just mentioned in a letter, which is why you don't open the box. You don't send it in the first place, because once you send it, like, well, sure. To be fair to her, we have to say all this other stuff. Well, yeah. Just shut up.
Yes. And then what? Like A week later, he sends another letter.
Sunday night, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I remember that night. Yeah. We're fried as hell. Somehow they managed to look through all these emails. They did it. They ended up finding something
A lot of them were duplicates was one
almost,
thing.
A ton of them were duplicates. A lot of them had just been auto backups from BlackBerry. I think he revealed this past week that maybe 12 had classified information, 10 of which were they had already previously seen and 2 of which were like sort of minor classified stuff.
And they were from the initial 3 months, as he said. So if we were going to show intent, it would have been in those initial 3 months, as if she would have written an email in the initial 3 months. Says, you know what? I'm going to have this private email server so I can mishandle classified information.
No. Come on. And then – so now we're talking like 3 days before the election. Sunday night, he informs Congress. They've concluded – they've gone through everything. They've concluded nothing would make them change their initial conclusion that she had not acted with intent and therefore they're not going to bring charges. And the Clinton people are actually as pissed at the second letter as they are the first.
Yeah, because it came so close to the election and it just sort of feeds into this media coverage and this cloud sort of surrounding her then where it's like if you're just if you're an average voter, you're maybe just seeing this coverage and saying, well, something's up here. There's so much smoke. There must be fire. Yeah.
So – suddenly, Comey, though, has restored his reputation with Donald Trump, who is now out there praising him, saying, what a guy. I always knew he'd come through. Real integrity. and Trump, of course, wins. And the question is, will he keep Comey on? At what point do we discover that the FBI is investigating Trump's ties to Russia?
There were some reports before the election, but there were a lot of things that for people that watch the FBI and the Justice Department closely. You could tell you could connect the strings before the election and tell they were, but they didn't confirm it.
Sure.
It wasn't actually really nailed down, I think, until like December, shortly after the election.
Because there was a 17 agency letter sort of saying point blank Russia's has interfered with the elections. They're meddling in our democracy. This happened in October. The FBI is conspicuously absent from signing on to that letter. It's later revealed, or I should say Harry Reid accuses, or numerous people accuse Comey of sort of deliberately downplaying his knowledge of this investigation into Russia prior to the election. So now we have this issue of double standards. Did he have a double standard for Clinton where he was willing to talk about the stuff versus Trump where he wasn't? And what's their rationale for why – what is his statement to explain why he wasn't willing to talk about the Trump stuff?
Because they don't talk about investigations?
Because they don't talk about – because he followed policy in that instance where there wasn't this – I guess if you want to go with the most – sort of favorable view of it for Comey, it would be that, you know, there was a previous disclosure and a lot of this would have basically date back to the issue of Loretta Lynch and the tarmac, because that's what created that initial conflict of interest. And, you know, he felt he couldn't keep her.
That was the butterfly flapping its wings event, and everything stems from there.
Yeah. Ripple. And
once he had
bond,
to weigh in, once he had to weigh in, then he had to stay in. And
correct.
With Trump, he never actually had to acknowledge it. So he wasn't ever going to.
Because there wasn't a conflict there because, I mean, you know, there wouldn't be, you wouldn't think the Obama Justice Department would really be holding back on investigating Donald Trump.
All right. So eventually, though, he does admit that that they are investigating Russia's meddling in the election and potentially ties to the Trump campaign. And Trump keeps him on. I think it's viewed as keep your enemies close potentially moment, but also that it would be highly controversial if he dismissed Comey with this thing hovering over his head.
There was an awkward sort of man hug kiss in the Oval Office. And
seemed abnormal too, to have Comey involved in that moment.
Completely bizarre.
Yes.
I'm trying to imagine Barack Obama kissing Bob Mueller. It doesn't work.
So what's happening? We're going to try to wrap this up quickly. I didn't realize we were taking this long. But can you walk us through what it's been like from that moment to this past week in terms of the FBI's handling of this investigation?
So there's a lot that we don't know. We know they're investigating. We don't know everything they're looking at. There are all these leaks coming out since Trump fired Comey. And I think we're going to see a lot more leaks because I think a lot of people at the FBI are pissed off. But they're conducting this investigation. And then the big moment was March 20th when Comey comes up to the Hill and publicly confirms that they're looking at. And my guess is that is the that's the event that eventually leads him to be fired. You know, that's when he goes up and talks about it. It's a massive firestorm, sure. Horrible day.
And
for
do
the
we
White
know
House.
Like just some of the specific things that they are looking into? I mean, we know Mike Flynn, instance, is one of them. Potential business ties, communications during the course of the campaign.
Yeah, there are a number of different threads. So obviously, the biggest one and the one with the biggest threat to the White House is whether the campaign colluded with Russia to hack emails or release emails. But then there are a bunch of separate threads. There is, you know, Carter Page and whether Carter Page was turned at some point.
This is the old former foreign policy advisor to Donald Trump, sort of mysterious energy official who like popped up in a Washington Post piece as Trump's foreign policy advisor when he had none. Major ties to Moscow.
There's Paul Manafort, and Paul Manafort has tons of problems. Everything
former campaign chairman, gone.
Right. Everything from not registering as a foreign agent to lots of shady business deals in Ukraine when he was working for a Putin crony.
Sure.
There's Mike Flynn, also didn't register as a foreign agent, which is a violation of the law. Potentially violated the Logan Act. That's never going to be prosecuted. But also might have lied to FBI agents in his interview, which he did without an attorney.
Which is what gets a lot of people, even if they don't get you on the original charge. If you lie to FBI agents about anything, there's a charge.
So now proof that what goes around comes around, that things always repeat themselves. In this context, the now current Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, is caught in a lie. He had told his confirmation hearing he had never talked to Russian officials while he was a surrogate for the Trump campaign. And then it's reported that he had talked to the Russian ambassador to the United States on several occasions. And he offers to – much like Loretta Lynch – he offers to recuse himself from –
this one's official, but yes.
This one is an official recusal.
Official
he sort offers of. To recuse –
sort of.
Sort of.
Sort of.
Well, yeah, we'll get to that. Yeah. So he says he's not going to be involved in these investigations that the FBI is currently doing into Trump campaign's connections with Russia. He's going to hand it off to his deputy, but his deputy hasn't been confirmed yet. That would be the current Deputy Attorney General, Mr. Rosenstein. I never can
remember.
Rosenstein. Okay. Meanwhile,
Sam Stein.
Okay, not related. All right. Meanwhile, this whole – does someone want to talk about Sally Yates, or should we just avoid Sally Yates because it's getting super complicated? Does this matter to any of this? No. Okay. We'll avoid Sally Yates. Okay. So now this week, let's just fast forward to this week. What happened this week? Do you want to tell the story? Can you do some of the talking here?
Yeah. I mean, essentially, we had a situation where an incredible moment in American history happened.
So Comey testifies again first. I think we should start with the Comey testimony.
Correct. And I mean, here's the issue with this is the timeline from the White House. I mean, they basically lied. I mean, the timeline that we now know about how Jim Comey came to be fired has completely changed in the past 72 hours.
Okay.
There's this evolution. What we now know and that Trump has admitted is that he was basically looking for an excuse to fire Jim Comey after his testimony on the Hill last week. That was sort of the trigger.
And why? What happened last week? This is different than the one where you said he admitted that they are investigating. This one, he said he felt a little nauseous, a little bit queasy, I would say,
right,
that he might have affected the electoral outcome.
Right. Well, there are two separate issues, and I mean, a lot of it was dealing with Russia. A lot of the hearing dealt with Russia. But what he said about this handling of the Clinton investigation when asked about it was that, the idea that he had an impact on the election or the Bureau had an impact on the election made him mildly nauseous. That was sort of the headline to come out of this. Whether it be that or whether it be his discussion about Russia in general and the investigation that is ongoing within the FBI, one of those two things basically made Trump very upset, and he reached the determination that he was going to fire Jim Comey, the FBI director.
Okay. And Trump – and how did they lie? I mean, it's almost comical to think that how badly they fucked up the lie, but they did.
Very badly.
Unraveled within hours. It was such a bad story. But anyways, go on. Sorry.
Essentially, I mean, it would have been a very odd story that they were putting forward. Essentially, their initial contention was that the new Deputy Attorney General,
Mr. Rosenstein,
came in and decided on his own independently to write up this memo and say we should fire Jim Comey. It didn't actually directly recommend it,
the richest part of the memo is why they should fire Comey.
Correct. And it was all based off of basically he treated Clinton unfairly,
in the sense that he should never have spoken
out.
All the reasons Matt's laid out, that's why you should fire James Comey. The very reasons that Donald Trump ended up cheering are the reasons why Comey should be fired.
Right. And you have Trump on the one hand saying that basically Clinton was treated with kid gloves in a lot of ways and basically that Comey should have been tougher on her. And then you have Rosenstein saying, well, actually, No, none of that. Like, Hillary Clinton was unfairly treated by FBI Director James Comey.
Okay. They just can't.
Hard to believe that story fell apart.
Yeah, I know. Shocking. And
that was really what Trump was upset about, was the unfair treatment of Hillary Clinton by the FBI.
And when they come out and they put out this story, and this is my favorite part of this whole saga because it's so hilarious. They decide that they're going to say, well, you know what? Democrats felt the same way too. And they wanted Comey to be fired too. Ergo, everyone should be happy that Trump did this, as if there was no other context to the story that Comey may be investigating Trump.
Right.
And of course, Democrats were not happy.
Right.
They were pissed. All right. Jeez. So they keep talking about this. And then today, as we're recording this, Trump admits to NBC that, in fact, it had not been the Rosenstein memo that compelled him to do the firing. He had made up his mind a while ago that Comey was too big of a showboat, that he wasn't doing a job effectively.
Just to clarify, we're saying that Donald Trump believes someone was too much of a showboat.
Exactly.
Okay, just wanted to make sure.
Too much of a showboat. and, you know, what I can't get over, the part that I don't think you might enrage you, is that because you were talking about how inappropriate Bill Clinton getting on an airplane with Loretta Lynn-Trippi, Trump admits during this interview that he's had dinner with Comey and talked to him two other times, at each moment asking him if he, Donald Trump himself, not the campaign, he himself is under FBI investigation. The very type of collusion, the type of conflict of interest that was so awful in the Bill Clinton, Loretta Lynch airplane moment is now being admitted to by the president.
It's being admitted to by the president, and he admitted he did it in the same conversation where Jim Comey asked to keep his job. So that, I mean, you're pretty close to a quid pro quo. You don't know what sequencing it was, but
sure.
If you're talking about whether I'm under investigation and whether you get to keep your job, it's pretty bad.
I can see how the dinner conversation went. You know, pass the asparagus. Am I going to have my job? Am I under investigation?
No.
Okay. All right. So Comey's gone. We don't know who the replacement is going to be. There's some ideas. I'm not going to go into that. But
based on the testimony we heard today, where we had essentially the acting FBI director directly contradicting the White House
in what
on
sense?
The idea that the White House contended that the FBI rank and file didn't support James Comey, that he lost their confidence. The new acting director said, nope, not true at all. So,
they're all very upset they supported the guy. He had their confidence.
Yeah.
So he'll be gone soon.
I don't hold that much hope for him. And maybe he could be a podcast guest. But in the end, okay, so now his tenure was what? Like three and a half years?
It was almost 4 years.
Until almost
4 years? 4 years coming September? Yeah.
I mean, that's not the longest tenure. You get 10-year terms.
6 years left.
And I mean, obviously it's going to change, but like if you had to guess, you know, when we look back at this, I mean, it's a complicated history and I don't know how you think he'll be perceived.
I mean, I think this is definitely the opening to his obituary. I mean, this is the impact that he had on the election is going to be one for the history books, I think.
He'll forever be defined as the man who potentially threw the election.
That will be, you know, right now that's probably the lead of his obituary, but it could change if this investigation goes somewhere. If this investigation ends up bringing down the president, the lead of his obituary will be the man leading the investigation that brought down Donald Trump was fired. Well, but he was. And was fired because of it.
Do you suspect, to close the loop here, that we'll have another Chuck Schumer Preet Bharara moment where someone invites one retired FBI director to the Hill to go through some dramatic moments where bad happened?
I thought we would have a moment like that even before Comey was fired. One thing about him is he always finds a way to assert his independence and, you know, he's a little bit of a drama queen. and he has done that in both of the administrations he worked for. I think he would have done it here. And now I think almost certainly we'll see him in front of the Hill talking about those conversations with the president and maybe a lot
and do
more.
You think, do you think he does that because he's worried about his reputation, he genuinely feels like he needs to get to the bottom of this, or both?
He has a little bit of a God complex. I think he really is a genuine man of integrity, but he also is really wrapped up in this idea that he's a genuine man of integrity, and that leads him to sometimes make mistakes. I don't think he will want he won't want to be remembered just for being fired. He's going to want to tell his side of the story
or for
the election. He's going to want to tell some side of the story and present himself. He's going to want the narrative to eventually be, I was fired for standing up to the president. And he'll find a way to make sure that story gets out.
Thanks to Matt Miller and Ryan Riley for joining us to talk about the rise and fall of James Comey. Again, season two of Candidate Confessional is going to start soon. It's going to be great. We have a lot of great stories to tell, a lot of great candidates. I hope you tune in. Tell all your friends to subscribe as well. We'll be up soon. Until then, I'll see you later.